Continue with our look at the Charleston Church Massacre. The search for the cause of what creates a Dylan Roof continues. Well, it's certainly challenging to understand what builds evil in a person. Reaching for a simple answer, as we talked about in the previous segment, won't always remove the problem. The fact is there are many elements which create the anger and hate in a person that eventually compels them to explode. My next guest is here to discuss one of these elements. She's the assistant Washington editor for The Nation, Zoe Carpenter. Good morning, Zoe.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nation.com, and we've also linked over at our website to Zoe's article, A History of Hate Rock from Johnny Rebel to Dylan Roof. And just as a foundation, Zoe, what is, I mean, the title obviously gives you some insight, but how much hate is there in hate rock?
Well, hate rock is a pretty broad description for a number of different types of music, which channels white supremacist ideology. So the history of his music goes back decades and decades. There was a strain of country music in the U.S. in the 1960s that developed sort of in response to the civil rights era, and it was an outlet for members of the KKK or KKK supporters to express their ideology in a way that tapped into cultural spaces. So sort of using the interest that people have in music to spread a message. In the 80s, we saw the rise of punk, neo-Nazi punk music that came over from Germany to the U.S., and there are various other strains of what we might call broadly hate rock now.
And as vile as it is, there apparently in many instances there's money to be made in hate rock.
There is. You know, it's kind of hard to quantify exactly how much money people are making. It seems that the so-called the heyday, if there is a heyday of hate rock, was in the late 90s and early 2000s. One of the big record labels that was run by the white supremacist group, the National Alliance, they owned a record label called Resistance, and that label was bringing in close to $1 million a year for the National Alliance in the early 2000s. And that helped the group go to an all-time high in terms of both membership and funding, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
We talk often here in the show about the recruitment efforts and methods of ISIS, which shocks people how many people in other countries are leaving their lives and going to fight with the terrorist group. Recruitment for the white supremacists and the racists, they needed their tools too, and that was one of the roles that hate rock plays.
Yeah, so the connection to Dylan Roof is that his cousin told a reporter that he was, quote, normal until he started listening to that white power music stuff. And we don't have any more information at this point as to what Dylan Roof was actually listening to or how it influenced him, but it wouldn't necessarily be surprising if that was one of the channels through which his racism crystallized. There are many other examples of people who engage in racially driven violence having connections to the white power music scene. So one of those examples is Wade Michael Page, who murdered six people at a Sikh temple in 2012. He was a member of several white power bands, and there have been other incidences with people who are involved in this scene. And it, you know, it makes sense if you think about how you want to reach out to young people who don't necessarily have a firm political ideology. It's probably more effective to reach out to them in a subtle way through music that they don't really necessarily understand the messages of, and get them into a scene, get them to be part of this skinhead community, and then they sort of, the kids develop this ideology after coming first for the music.
Or as unwilling as many people are to admit it, the ignorance that comes out of the frustration of kids, this is the music that connects them and, I guess, serves as the gateway to violence.
Right, exactly. I mean, in the late 1990s, some of these white supremacist groups became very intentional about seeking out disaffected young white teenagers, particularly in the Rust Belt, in places where, you know, there'd been a lot of demographic change and sort of tapping into the teenage angst with this punk music. In some cases, it was very effective.
I'm Zoe Carpenter, assistant Washington editor for The Nation, thenation.com. Our recent article, A History of Hate Rock from Johnny Rebel to Dylan Roof, and we've linked to that article specifically over at our website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Reading your article, too, Zoe, about recruitment, Panzerfaust Records had certainly, as far as recruiting was concerned, they had teens and youths in their target zone, but the company had an interesting, surprising, I guess, conclusion to its existence.
Yeah. So Panzerfaust had one of the more explicit recruitment efforts using music. They printed or distributed 100,000 copies of a mix CD of white power music, trying to get them into the hands of middle and high schoolers. And they had the tagline, "We don't just entertain racist kids, we create them."
Wonderful.
But what ended up happening with Panzerfaust was that the year after this Project Schoolyard launched, they collapsed amidst a debate about whether the label's co-founder was actually white. There was a sex scandal also involved in that collapse. And, I mean, this is sort of the deeper irony of this type of music being used, is that this music's roots are in African-American musical traditions. If you trace the history of rock and roll back, there's no way that you can claim that this is a racially pure strain of music. And so I think that there are all sorts of contradictions in the movement's use of the music, among other things.
And access is certainly easy, not just in the dark reaches of the Internet. You can get it through Spotify, even Amazon in some cases.
Yeah, and this has been one of the big issues in recent years. You know, the U.S. has very permissive free speech laws, and so unlike in Europe, authorities can't crack down on the people who are making the music and on the scene in the same way, although white power bands do struggle to get their music onto the traditional airwaves or into record stores, for example. But with the Internet, you have things like Spotify, iTunes. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been going after these mainstream distributors of music and trying to get them to pull certain artists from their streaming services. And they've had some success with Apple, still working on Spotify and Amazon to remove some bands. And then, of course, there are other darker corners of the Internet where, you know, it's much, much more difficult to police the circulation of this music. And there are arguments to be made that driving it further underground is actually perhaps not the best response if what you ultimately want to do is not just drive out the music, but drive out the racism.
I was just going to say, it's an odd thing to think in this process, but to play one or two cuts for someone who would never have the reason to go listen to any of this hate rock would probably provide a greater understanding and more proactive approach to fight against this hate rock by the masses.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize that this scene exists or don't understand why it would be attractive to a young person. I think it's very easy to dismiss someone who listens to hate rock as being just a deviant and to dismiss the genre as something that's disconnected from the rest of popular music. But, you know, it was only really in the second half of the 20th century that we needed to have a separate genre called hate rock because this sort of racism that we now think of as being fringe was embedded into mainstream culture for most of America's history. And even if you look today at mainstream politics and culture, we still see some of the same ideas that are being expressed in hate rock, such as the idea that America is under attack from some kind of racialized other. So the way that the right wing talks about immigration, the country is being destroyed by illegal immigrants. That's sort of a similar idea to what many young people find attractive in white power music, which is the sense that the white community needs to be protected and defended.
And a greater awareness of evil like this or fire for the gas like hate rock is would hopefully stop people from, when they see a Dylan Roof, get into their conspiratorial senses and say, well, Dylan's just a patsy because this is part of a government plot to put new gun laws and regulations and attack liberties and freedoms, which is another debate for another time. The article is A History of Hate Rock from Johnny Rebel to Dylan Roof by the assistant Washington editor for The Nation, nation.com, the web, which we can read the article in its entirety. Zoe Carpenter, Zoe, thanks so much for bringing to light some of the darkness in our society, but that's how you get rid of the darkness. You have to know where it is, and you've done that with your article. Thanks for doing that, for being here this morning.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.